Welcome to Motor Chat this Wednesday evening, and your panel is Harold, Evie and Kathy tonight, and also tonight as a special guest we have... Excellent. Welcome, Vincent.
Good evening, Harold, Kathy and Evie. Great to be with you again. Thank you for all that you do, and great to be talking again about road safety and transport matters again.
And well, I believe we have Road Safety Week coming up.
Certainly. Okay. Vincent, now... Again, this is something which has been on the agenda for quite some time, is the idea of the resale of second-hand helmets. We know that you cannot legally resell seat belts nor baby car seats, yet a helmet can be sold through any shop. You cannot test a helmet to make sure it's actually safe. So the MRA specifically has been asking for the ban on the commercial resale of helmets because the buyer, even with the best intentions, cannot prove that helmet is safe under all conditions.
Yes, so I think without any possible way of recognising that that helmet is safe, that continues to be a real concern for us. So I think in the event, I mean, obviously I can count the numbers on the floor of the lower house at the moment. And while we would be prepared to put forward some sort of legislation, ultimately would require government support as well. I note now we probably do have a new minister responsible for road safety, Dan Cregan.
Yes.
Be more than happy to speak to him about that and get his view of the world as to where that's at. But I think this is a bit of legislation that is coming. I think that it has been looked at and passed in other jurisdictions as well. So, yeah, this very much does remain an area of concern for us. And if the legislation is sensible, maybe it could even be done by regulation. I think if it was sensible, we would certainly look at supporting it.
No, that's a great. That would be a great step forward. Certainly, we need both sides of the house to support it, and we appreciate any help that we can get in moving this forward.
We'll certainly be looking at that because we consider it. Under the same idea as seat belts and baby cars.
And you mentioned the baby seat. So I've got a toddler, obviously, 2.5. Leonardo is 2.5 this week, actually. And you make a really good analogy because it's the same as if, you know, if there was an accident with your own vehicle, it's really hard to actually work out, unless you go to a designated accredited facility, to work out whether there's actually been any damage to that capsule. So obviously you're carrying precious cargo in a baby seat, you're carrying precious cargo with a helmet as well. Yeah. So, you know, your analogy is quite a relevant one, comparison.
Well, at the moment, helmets are the only thing that are mandated that a motorcyclist must wear whilst riding. They can ride naked if they wish to, with a helmet. But they've got to have a helmet.
I do remember all of these debates about the colour of clothing and the lighting. So yes,
yeah. So that for us, that's an important aspect of motorcycling.
Now, one of the other things that we're sort of trying to push quite heavily is the idea of small capacity scooters, so up to 50 cc's. At the moment, I can actually if I'm coming in from overseas, if I have a car licence, show that licence to anybody who's willing to sell or hire me a scooter, I can legally drive that on the road with no training whatsoever. Again, we're concerned about that. We don't have any idea as to how well the rider can actually control that small scooter, or whether or not they're actually ever been on a motorcycle at all in the first place. So, again, we're asking consideration to be given, especially with the review of the rider training, that even a small short course on motorcycle handling be given to people who wish to hire under a car licence.
Do you know, it's funny you raised this. I was looking at a shop the other day. I was just walking past with my family and I saw that it was actually advertised, one of these devices called them, and it actually said on there that no extra licence required.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, wow, so literally anyone with a driver's licence could go in, pick one of these up off the shelf literally and off you go and ride them. So, look, I think with these things here, you certainly, whilst you don't want to be over bureaucratic, I think what I'd like to look at, and it might be something that I, after looking at this again, I might actually go and get some data on. I'd love to know the incidents that have been involved with this sector of the market, and if they are, you know, a real outlier, then I think we should definitely look at it.
Yeah.
I think with these things, you want it to be evidence based. But saying that, an optional course, I think, would be a good idea. It always comes down to, well, then who pays for it and who funds it. But one thing I have learned through your own organisations is that there are great people with a whole lot of knowledge, and I think we should tap into that knowledge as well, that would be willing and able to help. So certainly optional, I'm not sure whether you would make it mandatory, but I think all these things have to be evidence-based. But I think now that we've got a new minister for road, responsible for road safety, we should take these issues up with him. I think if you haven't already, make sure you get in contact with him.
Yeah.
This is actually planned. We were hoping to speak.
I'll put in a good word.
Thank you.
Okay, the only incident of having a collision and having a fatality there is only one since the scooter law has been passed,
yes,
and allowing people to ride a 50cc scooter.
Okay.
But serious injuries, I can most probably give you 20 different people
that would be the
who
thing.
Have come off their,
yes,
scooter and have had serious consequences because of that. I wouldn't say serious injuries, but they've been off their scooter,
sure,
for 10, 20 weeks.
But with the potential
injury
to be really,
yeah,
significant.
And of, yeah, course, they do cause a lot of issues because they've not got control of the scooter. They cause incidents on the road, and they may be another 20 metres in front, and behind there's carnage. So there's that incident.
Well it's interesting that I saw just the other evening a 50cc scooter, and he was riding in the bicycle lane.
Mm.
And to me, that indicates a lack of confidence in managing traffic on the road. And so a training program would be very useful to improve that confidence. And you brought up an interesting issue of who pays.
Exactly.
And how much. And we've always felt that motorcycle training is an investment that the government should be considering, an investment in reducing accidents and fatalities. And so the way that the government is working at the moment is that it's making it very expensive for people to actually get the training. And we think that the government should be investing in that by making the, or putting reductions on the actual price of training. Because at the moment, the issue is cost recovery. And I think that that's not an investment.
I suppose if we look at it from the wider perspective, a serious injury or a fatality costs the government. So if we can prevent that, there's already that money in the bank that we have. So it really comes down to how much are we willing to spend to get these people trained properly, as opposed to sort of untrained and being dangerous on the roads. It's the economic cost that we've really got to look at. It's a long argument, a difficult argument, and who knows what the answer really is.
For sure. And I think when costs have to go up, and we understand that the governments will put up costs from time to time, we wouldn't want to see anything, above CPI. That would be a given, probably leading into other issues that we've spoken about in terms of revised rider training courses that we've been discussing recently,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah. Well, we've got the returning rider course, which is a nominal fee to do that, and it's a half-a-day course. I would imagine that something along with the scooter would be the same thing.
And the other thing, obviously, we've spoken about relating to that is obviously an on-road component, and mm-hmm, I know that the MRASA have been very vocal on that, so thank you for that as well. So I'm not sure if there's been any movement for the government. Hopefully there has.
Yes, there has
great
been, and we are absolutely over the moon that we've got an outcome is well and truly on the way.
Excellent.
And the department has listened to the advisory panel, and a lot of suggestions that were made at one meeting have been incorporated in the training, and that is still to be signed off, but we know that certainly it looks a hell of a lot better than what it was.
I've got to say, another good thing that has happened recently because of advocacy of groups like yourself is we've got the RAA and other bodies to participate in a road safety, if you like, roundtable. Now, I've noticed that governments don't always like to agree with the opposition, so that needs to be their idea. But my view is, as long as it happens in the long run, that's a good thing. So after that shocker of a year that we had last year, it looks like there is a much more of an appetite to work in a bipartisan fashion way, which is great.
Yeah, and see, this is what we agree with, that road safety is bipartisan. It's,
yes,
not a government issue. It's not an opposition issue.
Sure.
So that's important to road safety.
Mm. And we here in Motor Chat, and certainly in the MRA, have never made any secrets of the fact that we're talking to yourself today, and we hope to be able to talk to Dan. We were planning to talk with Joe. The whole point is that we're here to try and make motorcycling safer, as are you, as is the government, and that's the important thing. It works for everybody.
For sure. Exactly right. We've all got a responsibility to to help contribute to, you know, reducing those lives lost and also injuries on our roads. So absolutely agree.
So we're going through the cost of motorcycle license. There's been a dramatic increase in the detection of unlicensed and road users, and I think the introduction of higher costs and fees could increase that incidence as well.
Well, it's something that certainly every member of the advisory panel has been very vocal about, is to say that increase the costs, you're going to drive or you're going to increase the unlicensed rider quite a large amount.
It's a really good point. I certainly took the time to sort of study the links between, you know, antisocial behaviour, increases in crime, and the economy. And I'm a big believer that in those harder economic times, and as the cost of living bites more, you start to see more of these incidents. There is a link, and I think you're right. If you put the fees and charges up, then unfortunately some in our society that are doing it tough might see the need to cut corners. And so you want to make these things affordable. You want to keep the cost down as low as possible so that they do the right thing and that they do their renewals and all the rest of it. One of the incentives that we put out recently was an incentive policy for P-plate, as you may have seen, not that long ago. We basically said if you've got an unblemished record, that we would also waive in some respects and try and look at reducing the cost of your license. If you look at interstate, there are these schemes that exist around the country. WA, obviously, it helps when you've got all those mining royalties as well. But there are the stick, but actually the carrot as well. Creating that incentive. If you do the right thing, if you've got an unblemished record, that waiving your license fees for a period of time, that goes a long way.
You see, I know it does happen in New South Wales. I've talked about it with the Australian Motorcycle Council, that New South Wales has that scheme as well as. And it is a good incentive if you've done the correct thing and not had any infringements on your license.
Yeah.
Give them a bit of an incentive.
Yeah, exactly.
And we do the same with our insurance as well. If you've got an unblemished record.
That's about creating good habits too.
It is.
Young people, you go through your P's, if you have an unblemished record, well, here's an incentive. Well done. Do the right thing. Continue to do the right thing, because we know that's a vulnerable cohort, right?
Mm.
And also ones later in life, especially ones taking up their motorcycles, for the first time. You know, a lot of the time it's the baby boomers, right, deciding they want a motorbike, thinking they've got the confidence of 30 years driving, but they don't necessarily have the skills on the motorbike.
Yeah.
I remember I would always sometimes dread those sunny afternoons on a Sunday, and I knew it was good riding weather, and you just think, I hope today there isn't a serious incident, because, there's a little bit of complacency out there.
Yeah. I hate to say this, but on Saturday and Sunday, we don't ride on Gorge Road, full stop.
Yes.
The Gorge Road races are... they're not a myth. They are actually.
You just reminded me about something I have to follow up. So thank you about that. Yeah, that's a real trouble spot still.
It definitely is.
Near the gorge there.
So, and that particular road, it's just a racetrack. But anyway, that's another story.
One of the things which is sort of a concern to us is, I suppose, the haphazard ways that we're actually seeing roadworks being done. And, sort of there's been a lot of money spent, especially in the area that we live in, the northeastern suburbs, where you've got beautiful surfaces have been made, but within about 2 years or so, they seem to be almost worse than what they were before they were refurbished. So, sort of the quality of the road work, which is a concern. Now, in a car, generally a rut or anything like that, it feels uncomfortable and that's it. On a motorcycle, if you hit a rut or even just a bump going along in the direction of travel, it can and does throw your bike around quite a bit, so potentially quite dangerous. So, one of the things that we're looking at is how do we get an improvement in the quality of our road building?
Yeah, very much so. That's a really good point. Look, at some stage I looked at the road maintenance backlog in this state, and if you look at the state road and local road, it was something like in the order of $3 billion. We also had that heavy period of rain, which hasn't assisted. All I would say is, I am constantly sending letters in to the police minister and also the transport minister about roads. If you see a particular spot, please do report it either to your local MP or to the minister direct. But yeah, this is an area where we do need to get better, and we need a solid maintenance program, and it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And the more you don't upkeep that, the worse it gets over time. It's one of those things that can compound. If you don't invest initially, the holes and the the maintenance issues can get, you know, worse very quickly. So, look, I would agree this is an area that we have to do better in, and, you know, we'll keep holding the government to account on this. I've got an FOI in at the moment actually looking at that data, and hopefully it's improved, but if it hasn't, then we need to, you know, hold the government to account on that.
Yeah. Mm. So overseas, I know that there are countries that have this particular thing in order, that the company that's actually doing the road maintenance, if the road maintenance deteriorates, they are the ones who have to pay for it.
Oh, wow.
To
up. I'd be interested to hear about that, actually. Send that through.
I think it was South America that you were saying, Harold.
Yeah, when I was in Peru, there's a German company that manages all the highways. And if there's a problem with some guard railing, for example, if that gets damaged in a crash, then the company has 2 weeks to...
German efficiency. I love it.
They have 2 weeks to fix it. If they don't, they get fined.
Wow.
And the same with damage to roads due to weather. Once it's been reported,
wow,
they've got 2 weeks to fix it. And they have wonderful roads.
That seems pretty efficient. I'd like to know more about that. Send it through.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's something that's necessary, and I think certainly Peter Fraser would be very happy to.
Peter's a good guy.
Absolutely. He's always available to talk to
us. Hope to catch up with him. Send him my regards.
Yeah.
Look, if we could go to Tasmania for Road Safety Week, we would.
One of our listeners, just going back to road maintenance, one of our listeners at one of the events we went to came up with the complaint that so many... potholes in the road, and they're not really potholes, they're these inspection covers, little circular inspection covers, and sometimes they're as much as 1.5 inches or 30 millimetres below the surface of the road, and there's no effort being made to actually fix that, because when a motorcyclist hits it, especially coming out of the dip, it's quite shocking, and it can make the motorcycle quite unstable. So that's something else we'd like to look at. I noticed that on the new South Road section where they're putting the new road down, the inspection covers are flush with the road. Mm. So they're doing the right thing there. But it's in some of these older roads where they're not doing regular maintenance that for some reason the inspection covers seem to sink. And we learn where they are.
And we avoid them. Well, I know that there's one inspection cover on Northeast Road where I actually veer to one side of the lane.
Okay, you wanted to talk about medical.
If we have a look at the last 2 or 3 years, the number of crashes reported by the media where changes have been made in the reporting purely because the investigation has identified a medical episode was responsible. To us on a motorcycle, to any victim of a crash like that caused by a medical episode is irreversible. Or what we're asking for is perhaps a greater means of actually controlling or investigating fitness to drive through medical examinations. Now, motorcyclists, truck drivers, taxi drivers, etc., all need to have an annual physical and to be signed off by the GP. A car driver needs to self-assess after age 75 on a 5-yearly basis. And yes, certainly the GP is required to report incidents of their effect of, or the ability to drive has occurred. Now, Kathy wears glasses, I wear glasses, and legally we actually don't need to use them while we're driving. But quite honestly, you know, like Harold is from here where I am, and what is this, maybe 5 feet, is already slightly blurred.
Wow.
So therefore, I don't legally need glasses yet. You know, I know for myself I do. So the standards that we're operating under, I think, are a bit awkward.
I would agree. This is an area where we need to improve on. And I put my local MP hat on for this answer. Yes. Because at the same time, I have people sometimes coming through into my office who might be north of 80.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are very good drivers. Other perhaps, you know, potentially shouldn't be on the road, to be quite honest. And I've actually witnessed myself situations where elderly drivers have gotten into crashes, and people have asked, you know, how was that person, given their medical history, recent medical history, how were they actually allowed to still drive the car? So I can see both sides of the story here, but I agree this is an area where it needs to improve, because as you said, if someone cleans someone up on a bike in a car, I mean, if that could have been avoided, then of course, you know, we've got to be doing better to work with those regulations and those laws. So I can see the improvements, and this is an area, and I see it with the chauffeur industry as well. There are some inconsistencies. For me, it's about making sure that whoever is behind that bike or behind the wheel has the necessary competency from a medical point of view, but also that they're safe. They're up to scratch with their relevant training and ability.
We're not saying that the regulations are at fault here, because they are very detailed and very clear. If you go to, I think it's a SAPOL site, and have a look at the regulations, there's a link to the medical fitness to drive criteria.
Yes.
And they are very clear. And it's how they actually function from a medical to medico to patient viewpoint is where the problem is, I think.
I think part of the problem too is that if you go to your local GP, some people, and both Evie and I have had a relative who's been like this, can bully the GP into giving them the okay to drive. So maybe having a specific government medical officer who does the licensing medicals, so that they're not going to be swayed, they're not going to be bullied by somebody that this person goes to regularly.
There is no ongoing relationship between that person and the medico. So, you don't have to say, well, I've got to work with you in the future. And yes, in some ways you do, but the thing is, it's a very, no, you know, the five people that died in Ballarat because the guy failed to self-medicate or failed to take his medication, that's a tragedy that was so avoidable, yet medical conditions can come up very quickly.
Yes.
And the results can be absolutely devastating.
Yeah, it's certainly something we need to keep an eye on. I've eyewitnessed something where, and this has got nothing to do with age, but the person involved was, north of 80, and was conducting themselves in such a way where, quite frankly, they shouldn't have been driving. Mm. So I've witnessed these things firsthand. I'm on the road a lot, especially now as a shadow minister. So I agree it's an area that we need to look at and improve. And another one to take up with the new new minister responsible for road safety. Mm. Lots to talk about. Okay. Well, thank you very much for having me on the program tonight. I really do appreciate it. I'm looking forward to seeing you out and about during Road Safety Week. And as I said, thank you for all the advocacy and support that you provide in the industry out there in the community. We very much appreciate it, and I look forward to speaking with you all soon.
Thank you very much,
Vincent. Thanks for coming in, Vincent.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to talk to you again.